Right, I made it with seconds to spare this morning. Good morning, how you doing? I've been editing right up till, well, a few seconds ago. It is Sunday morning, January 19th, 2020. Welcome to Sunday View with me, Richie Allen. It's freezing in Salford here. Freezing fog, temperatures -2, -3 degrees. That's pretty cold. Not too cold in the studio, though. Hope you're relaxed, warm, comfortable, and I hope you've had a good weekend thus far. Welcome to Sunday View, and I look forward to hearing from you on Twitter. I'm sure you'll have a few things to say about some of the big stories that we're covering this morning. Alrighty, let's get on with it then.
Well, ring out the gimp.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, I'm having a nice weekend myself. It's pretty busy around here, but I'm having a nice weekend. It's been more than 2 weeks now since I had a drink. I'm not going to bore you too much with any more of that going forward. That's a nice thing to be able to say. Yeah, all good here. Right, enough of that then. Yeah, freezing. -2, -3 got me long johns on. Not quite. Long johns. Onesies. There is a generation of people who believe the onesie is a recent invention, of course. They think it's new. Been around forever. Bloody long johns, onesies. Yeah, it's pretty cold today. I've not been out running. I will go running probably a bit later on. Hopefully the footpaths won't be as icy and as treacherous as they were yesterday. Anyway, saw a couple of films too. I'm going to go all Kermode and Mayo on you. If you're not in the UK, you mightn't have a clue who Kermode and Mayo are. Simon Mayo and Mark Kermode. They're BBC radio presenters. Simon Mayo, very well known, of course. And they have a film review show once a week, which is quite good now. Let's give credit where credit is due. So we saw a couple of films yesterday. We tried to have a film-a-thon, her indoors, Caroline and myself. But you know, when you've got a brand new pup in the house, an 11-week-old pup, you've got to watch films in stages. So you watch films in three parts, you know. It's kind of mental, really. But two films, one called Dark Waters, which is about the DuPont Company, and a lawyer, an environmental lawyer called Robert Billott. You might know the story, you probably do. Billott is famous for suing DuPont on behalf of people in West Virginia. Because DuPont, and here's where I'm glad I'm not drinking, because I'm going to try and pronounce this, they were dumping perfluorooctanoic acid, which is PFOA, perfluorooctanoic acid, often known as C8. They were dumping that in landfills that were then seeping, it was then seeping into the water supply in West Virginia, and it affected the health of thousands of people. It killed God knows how many people. And the film is about this guy suing them. And it's very good now. I'm never going to be a film reviewer, because I'll use terminology like, it's very good now. I won't give you any, I don't know, flowery review where I throw in some industry terminology, because I don't have the lingo. But it's a very well-made, I think, film. It stars Anne Hathaway, Mark Ruffalo plays Robert Billott, and Tim Robbins plays the senior partner in Robert Billott's firm. And it's a good film. Film! Not film, film. Now, Richard Jewell, we watched Richard Jewell as well yesterday. This is the directorial... This is Clint Eastwood in directorial mode. And we know that Clint is a great director. We mightn't like Clint's opinions politically. We might not. We might have a falling out with Clint. But he's a brilliant actor and an amazing director, Clint Eastwood. And this is of course, is the film about the terrorist incident at the Olympics in 1996 in the United States of America. The US, the Olympics, 96 Olympics, Atlanta, right? And, excuse me, it's about Richard Jewell, who's a security guard who discovers a bomb and reports it very quickly and helps to clear the area. But the bomb goes off and a couple of people are killed and lots are injured. And then the news media and the FBI start to look at Richard Jewell, or the FBI starts to look at Richard Jewell as maybe being the man who planted the bomb, right? You probably know the story. And it's a great commentary on the behaviour of the media then and now. It's very good now, okay? And again, there's the terminology there. I've got a career, I think, in film reviewing, movie reviewing. It's very, very good. Kathy Bates is brilliant as Richard Jewell's mother. I love Kathy Bates, by the way. Love her. Love Kathy Bates. Primary Colours, John Travolta, she was in that. Emma Thompson, amazing woman. She was in Misery, of course. She was in The Water Boy with Adam Sandler and Rob Schneider. Good morning, Rob, by the way. She's very, very, very good. And she's brilliant in this. And Paul Walter Hauser plays Richard Jewell. And it's a star turn. And he might get an Oscar for it. So there you are. I'm recommending those two movies. Now, before we look at the front pages of the newspapers, here's a public service announcement for you. John Kitson and Mark Steele on Friday, January 24th. That's next Friday. John Kitson and Mark Steele, who've been campaigning about the dangers of 5G, will be at AMP Studios in London, and that's on Old Kent Road. 7 till 10, Friday 24th of January, next Friday. Mark Steele and John Kitson, Old Kent Road. That's 897A Old Kent Road, London. 897A Old Kent Road in London. If you're in the vicinity, do pop along, or send those who might be a bit on the fence or who might not know about 5G, bring them to see this presentation, John Kitson and Mark Steele. All right. 7 minutes past 11. Good morning. I am Richie Allen, the BBG. It ain't the BBC. So the Sunday newspapers are full of royal family stories. So let's rush through them. You ready? I should play the Bonanza theme. But I don't think I have it, do I? Well, if you didn't prepare for it now, Richie, you know. I don't think I have it, no. Should play the Bonanza theme and run through them. Here they are very quickly. The front page of the Sunday Express. It reads, freedom at a price. Oh, Jesus. The royal parasites are all over the news this morning. Sunday Times, they're out. The Sussexes seal exit deal with the Queen. Escape for Harry and Meghan, no escape for us, though. The Sunday Mirror, Queen orders a hard Megxit. She orders a hard Megxit. That's very clever. Sunday Mirror. The Mail on Sunday, the price of Megxit. The Sun on Sunday, payback time. Yeah. And the Sunday Telegraph, Harry and Meghan cast out, I doubt it. The Observer, PM to Cabinet, shape up or I'll sack you within weeks. That's nice. It's a change from the royal family. It's allegedly Boris Johnson saying to his cabinet, the onus is on you now to start delivering on the policies that we stood on when we won the election in the landslide victory a few weeks ago. Get to work quick, make things happen, or I'll get rid of you. But also on the front page of the Sunday Observer, Sussexes to drop Royal Highness titles and return £2.4 million to the taxpayers. Yeah. And the Star on Sunday, Harry gets hair dryer off Queen, but hair is spelt air, H-E-I-R. This old bullshit, right? Just briefly, very briefly, we'll hear from one or two people very briefly, and then we will move away from the royal family. On the Mar show on BBC One this morning, on the sofa, looking at the newspapers with Andrew, were two people. Nadia Whitcomb, she's the baby of the house. She was recently elected as an MP for the Labour Party, very recently, obviously. She's 23, I believe, and she is the youngest MP in Parliament, making her the baby of the house. Brand new she is, Nadia Whitcomb. And sitting alongside her was the associate editor of The Telegraph, Camilla Tominey. So what does the young Labour woman, the baby of the house, think of the Harry and Meghan Megxit story? What does she think? Nadia Whitcomb.
I mean, ultimately, I think this is a 35-year-old man who has been on the front pages and on the news every day because he didn't ask his nan before moving out. What this really speaks to is the culture war happening in this country. And that's...
Tell me a little bit about the culture war, because there's been a lot of controversy about why they're really going and what they felt the pressures were.
I think this is very much like Brexit, and we're seeing it play out like the Brexit debate, with older people outraged at Meghan and Harry's decision, younger, more progressive people overwhelmingly supportive, and it's being used to stoke division.
We saw some very striking opinion polls last week, actually, showing that, that under 30s or under 35s are very, very pro-Harry and Meghan, and older people are very, very hostile. You're quite right about that. Do you think that there is a race element to this?
I don't think that's the question. Clearly, the press has treated Meghan very differently to Kate. We can see that clearly. For example, when Meghan eats an avocado, it's Meghan's favourite snack, fueling drought, murder. When it's Kate, it's an avocado.
It's a nice avocado. Yes,
I think when
Kate was pregnant, Kate cradles baby bump. When Meghan is pregnant, cradling her baby bump, she's an attention seeker.
Mm. So Nadia Whitholm, the very young Labour woman, thinks it's racism. No big surprise there. Not going to give her any stick, though. She's too new. She's too new to be going after, isn't she? Or is she not? Well, we might go after her in a minute. That's Nadia Whitholm. Obviously, Camilla Tominey, who's a journalist, very experienced journalist, obviously, she's not impressed at all.
I think Nadia's referring to a BuzzFeed report which kind of brought up all of these conflicting headlines, which were all largely online on websites and not in the actual newspapers. People have got quite short memories. I think probably the most vilified member of the royal family was the Duchess of Cornwall, Camilla. And I don't think any of that could have been accused for being racially motivated. What we've had here really is a vindication of some of the reportage. There were people like me and others in the Royal Press Pack reporting that they were increasingly unhappy, that there was a rift in the royal family, that they were operating in a silo because of
dreadful gossips at the time.
They weren't consulting the Queen, and that's happened. You know, they've broken away. What I also find somewhat ironic is the idea that Prince Harry's always surrounded himself by this kind of so-called circle of trust, this watertight group of friends that have never leaked. They're now throwing themselves over into Canada and America, surrounding themselves by people that are clearly now going to be on the take because they'll want their 10% cut of anything that the Sussexes come out with next. And equally, the paparazzi, they're largely left alone here because there isn't a market anymore for paparazzi shots. And yet in places like LA or indeed in Canada at the moment, there are paps following them around Vancouver. That's not the British press, it's foreign press.
But no, when you see two Daily Mail articles, and these aren't articles that you've written, Camilla, and about the same two issues, avocados, baby bumps, Meghan and Kate, what else do you call it?
Well, I don't know what
there is an edge, isn't there, when it comes to coverage of Meghan.
I think Andrew is enamoured of the young, pretty Labour woman, Nadia. There is an edge, isn't there? Stop editorialising, you arsehole. You've got both sides of it there. You've got the young woman who, she might be mixed race, Nadia. She might not be. Forgive me for not looking into her background. She might not be mixed race, Nadia. Somebody help me out here to save me looking for it. But she's not white, I don't think, Nadia. And then you've got Camilla Tominey, who's the Telegraph woman. You've got both sides. Just let them get on with it. Anyway.
Coverage of Meghan.
There has been some headlines which I think, and I've called out in the paper, I think there was a headline once about Straight Out of Compton, and you just put your head in your hands and go, what are you writing? Having said that, I suppose equally there has been a coverage of a man who Meghan has married, once dressing up in a Nazi uniform, and them taking refuge in a country led by a man that once blacked up. And no comment has been made of that. You know, Justin Trudeau is one of Meghan's closest friends, so maybe people want to call out his discrimination against others.
He had a pretty rough time
others.
At the time, I remember.
Yes,
well,
about that.
Justin Trudeau is one of her best friends. That's bad enough. All right, we're not going to talk too much more about this royal nonsense. So we're not. Okay. Let's move on from it. Hey, briefly, let's stay with Nadia Whitholm, the baby of the house. Yeah. Do you think Harry knows? I said this last week, so let's not, you know, go over old ground. Do you think he knows? Do you think he's read Noel Botham's books? Do you think he's seen the documentaries? Do you think he knows that his mother was murdered, number one, and number two, that his own household might have had some part to play in it? Really? I don't know. A lot of people are making a lot of mileage out of that, especially in the independent media, making the assumption that this is some sort of getaway from him, that he's always known and he's been looking for a situation to arise where he could get out. I don't know. Anyway, let's stay with the baby of the house just briefly, Nadia Whitholm, Andrew Marr asks her a question on immigration, and her answer won't surprise you.
Can we talk, Nadia, about another story then, which is the front page of the, and indeed inside the Sunday Telegraph, says that Number 10 is going to bring forward a much tougher immigration policy much earlier than we thought. It's going to be almost immediately after Brexit, and it's going to make applications to come into the UK and work for lower skilled workers a great deal harder.
This comes as no surprise. I think we've always said that migrants would be the first to be thrown under the bus after Brexit, certainly a hard Tory Brexit. And particularly after measures for child refugees and family reunion was scrapped, this doesn't surprise me.
But yeah, right, hang on a second, let's rewind. She's gone all woke there and all virtue signaller very early in her career. Listen to what Marr says specifically. It's very important, this.
Can we talk, Nadia, about another story then, which is the front page of the, and indeed inside the Sunday Telegraph.
Now listen to what is said in the story.
It says that Number 10 is going to bring forward a much tougher immigration policy much earlier than we thought. It's going to be almost immediately after Brexit, and it's going to make applications to come into the UK and work for lower skilled workers almost immediately after Brexit, and it's going to make applications to come into the UK and work for lower skilled workers a great deal harder.
Applications to come into the UK from lower skilled workers is going to be harder if the government is able to pass this legislation. Now, I have no truck with Boris the Liar Johnson and toxic Tories and all the scumbags sitting behind them on the front benches there. No time for any of these people. But the plan, as it stands, is to make it more difficult for lower skilled workers to come here. That's the specific thing. Now, as a socialist, the baby of the house, Nadia Whittam, should be saying to Andrew Marr, well, you know, we learned our lesson in the recent election. In the heartlands, in the northwest, in the north and in the northeast, where people have it tough, where there aren't so many manufacturing jobs left anymore. We've learned our lesson. We understand that they were concerned about unfettered immigration. And yes, we are prepared to have a look at maybe limiting the amount of lesser skilled workers coming into the country. But no, no, of course not. She can't say that. Because she's not a socialist. So she says, well, immigrants are bearing the brunt of this, blah, blah, blah.
This comes as no surprise. I think.
Blah, 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 blah.
We've always said that migrants would be the first.
Blah, 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 blah.
Thrown under the bus after Brexit, certainly a hard Tory Brexit. And particularly after measures for child refugees and family reunion.
It's got nothing to do with child refugees. Nothing to do with it. The question was about people coming to the country without qualifications and the impact that might have on the natives. You know the natives, Nadia, the natives, the people who've lived in the UK, they live here, you know, born and bred here, English people, you know, who it's hard enough for them to get a job anyway outside of 0 hours contract nonsense. Those people, Nadia, it's got nothing to do with child refugees. And Marr is so utterly shit at his job that he doesn't stop her in her tracks.
Reunion was scrapped. This doesn't surprise me, but it worries me greatly.
Ah, shut up, you tart. There you are, 23, baby of the house. It's the first time we've called her a tart. Useless, metropolitan, liberal elite. Tosser! Doesn't understand what it's like, you know, to get up every morning not knowing whether at the end of the day you're still going to be in your house. Refugees and child refugees. Fuck child refugees. Today, I'm asking you about semi-skilled or no-skilled workers coming in here. That's what I'm asking you about. We can talk about child refugees another time. I don't mean fuck child refugees. Of course, it's important. Anyway, however, we'll stay with the baby of the house. Marr asks her about her salary and her making the headlines for pledging to give some of her salary away.
Nadia, just a couple of things I wanted to ask you about as well. You became briefly very, very famous for giving up, I think, about half of your MP's salary and handing it to local causes and charities and groups. Why did you do that?
So I'll take home 35k and I'll need to donate about 19k to fulfil that pledge. I think it's an important representational principle for workers' representatives to be on a worker's wage. It's not to say that MPs don't work hard.
Well, I was going to say, because some
they do, but everyone deserves a pay rise. Firefighters, teaching assistants, nurses, and I'll take mine when they get theirs.
Some people might say the point about being an MP is it's an incredibly important, difficult job, and people should be properly rewarded for it. And actually, MPs get, roughly speaking, what they should get.
I don't think anyone would say that a take home of 35k isn't plenty of money to live on. So is being a care worker a very important job. I was a care worker, and they need to be paid properly too, and a very long way from that currently.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. I'm not going to suggest, I'm not, that her pledge to give away part of her salary isn't sincere. It probably is. Good for you, kid. Good for you. Right, but lose the wokeness. Lose it. Divest yourself of it. Enter the real world, love, you know. You know, people in, when you've got people in this country and they're unskilled, meaning that it's difficult for them to get gainful, meaningful employment that they can depend on, you know, that they're not worried about, you know, it'll end in 3 months or 6 months. You've got to prioritise those people over people from other parts of Europe who might want to come into the country because they might think that living conditions are favourable here. You've got to prioritise the people that are here. You just have to do that. That isn't racism. It isn't bigotry. It's just fairness. They elect you to do that, love. Love is not a derogatory term, by the way. It's not patronising. I mean it. We say love all the time here in the Northwest. Everybody is love. In Nottingham, they call everybody duck. Everybody is duck for some reason. I would say to her, look after your own. Don't worry about people in Europe coming over here. Fuck them. They've got their own governments. All right? All right, let's move on. And I didn't mean fuck child refugees either, but you know what I mean. I meant that's not the issue today. The issue today is semi-skilled workers coming in here and obviously making the competition for jobs even harder than it ought to be. Let's leave that alone. 23 minutes past the hour. I think you get me. Right, I think you understand what I mean by that. Right, okay. Let's move right on to Iran briefly. The media's gone very quiet on Iran until this morning. We'll stay with Andrew Marr. He spoke with the US Special Representative on Iran, a man called Brian Hook. Andrew Marr asked him, Mr. Hook, what does the United States want out of this situation with Iran? We're a couple of weeks after the assassination of Qasem Soleimani, the Iranian retaliation, the unfortunate incident with the Ukrainian airliner being shot down. Terrible thing. Tragic and disgraceful. What does the United States want?
Well, a couple of things. We've put in place a campaign of maximum economic pressure to drive national security objectives that we would like to meet. We would like to get to a new and better deal to replace the Iran nuclear deal. That deal would cover Iran's nuclear program, its missile program, its regional terrorism, and also its hostage taking. So that is our mission set. We also would like to see the Iranian people have a government that is truly representative of their interests. This regime represents the Iranian people very badly.
The trouble is, I suppose, Mr. Hook, is that certainly when it comes to the Iranian nuclear program, for instance, since America has pulled out, enrichment has speeded up. And since the killing of General Soleimani, the regime internally has given way to the hardliners, not the more moderate people. In other words, it's going in the wrong direction so far as America is concerned.
Andrew, it's a good question. Let me take the first part of it. Your question reveals one of the great deficiencies of the Iran nuclear deal is that it allowed Iran to enrich. The UN Security Council passed unanimously a series of resolutions in 2007 and 8 prohibiting Iran from enriching. So when we got out of the Iran nuclear deal and announced a new Iran strategy, at the top of that list is restoring the UN standard of no enrichment. That the negotiator should have never given that away. Because once you permit the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism to enrich, it incentivizes other nations in the region to do the same.
What? All right. That's too easy. I'm not going to say anything about that. Yeah, the leading sponsor of terror. Yeah, Iran. Yeah. Mar just sits there. So tensions are increasing in the Middle East. We're waiting for a response from the militias allegedly controlled by General Soleimani. So killing him has destabilized things there, says Andrew Marr. What does Brian Hook, the US Special Representative on Iran, say to the notion that killing Soleimani has made things more problematic?
When the president ordered the strike on Qasem Soleimani, we took off of the battlefield the deadliest terrorist in the world. When you look at his 21-year history, he is the architect of all of Iran's major acts of terrorism. He murdered over 600 Americans in the Iraq War, but then he also helped Assad kill 500,000 Muslims, and then helped create the worst refugee crisis since World War II in Europe. And so taking him off the battlefield, I don't know how anybody can argue that somehow we've made the Middle East more dangerous by killing the world's deadliest terrorist.
Yeah. All right, we'll leave Iran alone then. We're kind of moving along at a pace this morning, aren't we? The sun is coming out. The sun has got his hat on in the dirty old town. It might thaw out the footpaths and all the rest of it here in Salford. I met my love. That's the one. Let's leave Iran alone. Let's move on to a couple of stories. I'll tell you what we're going to do now. We're going to take a tune. Oh, yeah. We'll take a tune. I've got Cat Stevens. Because I was jogging the other day, and for some reason, Cat Stevens songs, plural, were playing in my head. I could hear Cat Stevens in my head. And I thought, I must get some old Cat Stevens vinyl. Must go and dig some out in some of the websites that I use to buy old, cheap vinyl. And here's Cat Stevens singing Father and Son, which is lovely, on the Richie Allen Radio Show, Sunday View, January 19th, 2020. Back with more news after this. 29 minutes to the top of the hour. Welcome! Get up out of that bed. There was a wonderful presenter on WLRFM, Waterford Local Radio, for many, many, many years, called Tony Weldon. And he had a band for many years called the Melody Makers. And he presented a radio show on WLRFM every Sunday morning. And it was a request show. And people would phone in about relatives they had in hospital. They would phone in about their granddad, their gran, their mums, their dads. And Tony would play all these dedications. And he would play music from the 40s, 50s, 60s. He'd play anything from Mario Lanza, Percy French, Sinatra. It was one of the most amazing radio programmes that I've ever heard in my life. And really only people in Waterford and County Waterford would have ever heard of it. And he died a good 10 or more years ago, Tony. But he was a lovely man, and he was great to me when I started out at WLR-FM. He was great with a kind word and a bit of advice. And listening to stuff like that makes me think of him. And I get a bit of a lump in my throat, so I do. Tony Weldon, or Yeshde Gareva on him. What a man he was, Tony. Right. Let's move on. Yes, let's move on to the Mail on Sunday. Very quickly, a couple of stories about abortion in the newspapers today. Now, I know this comes up because I know many of my listeners have got grave concerns about abortion and, you know, abortion becoming very accessible for people. And I know a lot of my listeners have grave concerns about young women and young men, young couples, being told that, you know, being given kind of one side of the story about abortion. Namely, it's okay, don't worry about it, your right to choose, and all of that. And again, a lot of my listeners would be concerned that the other side of that story, namely, you can have the baby, things will be okay, you can adopt, things will be okay, that side is not often presented as well as the other side. So my listeners will be very interested in a story in the Mail on Sunday this morning. The headline is, Unborn Babies Can Feel Pain Before the 24-Week Abortion Limit, according to scientists. Unborn babies can feel pain before the 24-week abortion limit. Here's the story. Again, unborn babies may be able to feel pain before 24 weeks, say scientists, meaning the babies could suffer as they are being aborted. Until now, the consensus of medical opinion has been that fetuses cannot feel pain before 24 weeks gestation, after which abortion is illegal in Britain, except in special cases. But two medical researchers, including, strangely enough, a pro-choice British pain expert, who used to think there was no chance fetuses could feel pain that early, he says recent studies strongly suggest the assumption is incorrect. The studies indicate unborn babies might be able to feel something like pain as early as 13 weeks. Women going for abortions who have reached this stage of pregnancy should be told the fetus could experience pain while being terminated, they argue, and medical staff should ask if the woman wants it to be given pain relief. To carry on, regardless of new evidence, quote, flirts with moral recklessness, they write in the influential Journal of Medical Ethics. So last night, unsurprisingly, anti-abortionists said the scientists' claims should change attitudes towards abortion and the practice of it. The lead author of this article is British Professor Stuart Derbyshire. He's acted as a consultant to the Pro-Choice Forum and Planned Parenthood. Amazingly. Pro-Choice Forum is here in the UK. Planned Parenthood is obviously an American pro-choice organisation. And in the article in the Journal of Medical Ethics, Steve Derbyshire writes that there is now good evidence that the brain and nervous system are sufficiently wired up by 18 weeks for the fetus to feel pain. It'll be interesting to see if that gets any discussion in the UK news programmes today and tomorrow, Monday, on the television and radio programme, because it is obviously very important news that. Be interesting to see if the research is peer-reviewed and what the implications are for that. All right. There's also a story in the press today about Rebecca Long-Bailey, who's a candidate in the leadership election, the Labour Party leadership election, of course, and she's a Catholic, and she's getting attacked by pro-choice groups for something she allegedly said. It's been claimed that she's being smeared because of her abortion stance, and Catholic Labour MPs and Catholic Tory MPs are coming out to stand up for Rebecca Long-Bailey's right to her opinion. She's been accused of having regressive abortion views. And this is because she responded to a questionnaire sent out by local Catholic churches during the election campaign. And in answering a question, she said she did not agree with current rules allowing women to terminate their children on disability grounds after 24 weeks. So she basically said, when a woman finds out after 24 weeks that the child might be disabled, I don't agree with allowing terminations at that particular juncture. Because of that, she's been attacked by pro-choice groups and feminist groups, and it's all very interesting. So abortion making the headlines this morning as well. Let's move on. Speaking of the Labour... See, I can't say it. Why can't I say that? Labour leadership. It's not a tongue twister. Labour leadership. Labour leadership contest. One of Rebecca Long-Bailey's competitors is the lovely, the truly lovely Jess Phillips from Birmingham Yardley. Phillips was on Sky News this morning, and as you'd expect, Jess talked a lot of horse shit about everything. But then men came up, and the leadership contest, and women leaders. And Jess, well, she was off to the races.
How do you think it would look if the Labour Party ended up electing another man?
True to form. the Labour Party, it has a blind spot in this regard. It always has. And it's genuinely frustrating because the Labour Party is absolutely... If you set the test as being how it has improved the lives of women in the country, how it has fought for women's representation, how it fights for women in politics at almost every level, except that one. And so I think it does a disservice to the Labour Party's record on women, but I think it would look bad. if I was honest.
Yeah. In April, when we met last year, you told me it would be a massive embarrassment if the Labour Party once again fails to have a woman leader.
Well, I mean, I think that I pretty much, especially when there's one man in the race and four women.
So you think it would be a bit embarrassing?
Yeah, I think it will be embarrassing. And what's more, it gives absolute grist to the mill and ammunition to our other side. I've had, you know, Tory members of Parliament like laughing at us after the last time, especially when Theresa May, because they had an all-women shortlist, didn't they? Because it was Theresa May and Andrea Leadsom. You know, it's not great if we can't ever seem to think that the women are good enough. It's always some... when you're a woman in politics, you're always the next time.
You see, Jess can't countenance, Jess can't comprehend the idea that the women just might be shit, you know, the four of them. I'm not saying they are now. That's entirely subjective. That's up to you. I'm not saying... Well, I am. I am saying it. I am. But not the women. They're all shit. Every one of them. She can't comprehend the idea that herself, and she's truly dreadful, Jess Phillips, and Rebecca Long-Bailey and Lisa Nanda and Emily Thornberry just might be absolutely unpalatable. That might be the reason why Starmer might win. Right? Maybe it's got nothing to do with the fact that he's a man. But again, what do I know? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just a big baldy gammon with my white privilege.
Next time. Oh, it'll be your turn next time.
It'll never be your turn, Jess.
When you're a woman in
politics,
it's always like, you're always told we have to pick the best person for the job.
Exactly. We have to pick the best person for the job, Jess. What a novel idea.
You're always told we have to pick the best person for the job, as if that best person, they never mean the best person.
This is gaslighting. This is the definition of it. When people say we need to get the best person for the job, they don't mean that. What they mean is they want the best man. The fuckers. Gaslighting.
Person. They often mean the best man. And that is disappointing.
Do you think men need to step aside sometimes?
Piss off, Sophie.
Sometimes.
Do you think men need to step aside sometimes? No, we're not going anywhere.
I think that if you truly believe in women's representation, sometimes, and that goes not just for just women in the way that intersects in other areas, that sometimes passing the mic is the... is the greatest way to show that you truly believe in something.
Pass the mic, says Jess Phillips. Yeah, okay.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Now, we're coming up for 18 minutes to midday. Yes, Manchester United are probably on their way to Liverpool, the big game of the weekend, one of the biggest games in world football, Liverpool versus United, 4:30 today at Anfield. I dread. I'll watch it, but I dread. But then again, you never know. You just never know in this crazy world. We heard from Jess Phillips there. Let's move on then. I'll tell you what, we men are fucking toxic, right? We're shit. We're worthless. And if you're white, well, you're the devil. You're the devil himself. I had a laugh. You've probably seen this, but then listeners overseas may not have seen it. The actor and musician Lawrence Fox was on BBC Question Time last Thursday, presented these days by Fiona Bruce. Because when, I'm trying to think of his name, oh, be Jesus, Imagine, you've watched him a million times on television. David Dimbleby, that's right, David Dimbleby. When David Dimbleby retired, the BBC decided that it had to be a woman to present Question Time. Now, Fiona Bruce is a very experienced and very capable presenter. I wouldn't dare say she didn't deserve it. But might be a little bit uncomfortable. From time to time, she might think, eh. The BBC decided it had to be a woman and chose Fiona Bruce. Okay. So the actor and musician Lawrence Fox was on the show last Thursday. Question Time is a panel show. Five, mostly politicians, but sometimes celebrities, are invited every Thursday. They sit on a panel next to Fiona Bruce and they are asked questions about political issues by the audience. Lawrence Fox got into a spat with a woman in the audience and the pixie-esque Shammy Chakra fucking Barty. That's a great Irish ability, by the way. No other people on planet Earth can do that. We're geniuses at it. We can insert a cuss word into another word or a noun, whatever. Chakra fucking Barty. It's brilliant. Caroline says to me, it's positively musical when you do it, Richie. I can do soliloquies like that. Anyway, Lawrence Fox doesn't believe that Meghan Markle was racially abused, and it doesn't go down very well with some people in the audience.
The problem we've got with this is that Meghan has agreed to be Harry's wife, and then the press have torn her to pieces. Let's be really clear about what this is. Let's call it by its name. It's racism. She's a black woman and she has been torn to pieces.
It's not racism.
It absolutely is.
Not. We're the most tolerant, lovely country in Europe. Let's celebrate our
We're not the most lovely country in Europe or anything like it, but I guarantee you, the UK is amongst the most tolerant places on planet Earth. He's got that right.
It's so easy to throw the charge of racism at everybody, and it's really starting
what
to get
boring. What
worries
me about
now.
Your comment is, you are a white privileged male who has no experience.
I can't help what I am. I was born like this. It's an immutable characteristic. So to call me a white privileged male is to be racist. You're being racist.
You cannot.
Exactly. I don't know if it's racist to call him a white privileged male. I wouldn't go that far. I don't imagine the woman is racist. She's just stupid. And, you know, we've said this a thousand times, you and me. There ought not to be... Number one, there ought not to be a law for being stupid. And two, there ought not to be too much condemnation for being stupid. You know, there are plenty of stupid people around us. And when somebody throws white privilege at you, that's pretty stupid. Let her think what she wants. White privilege. Anyway, it progressed. Now, you have to bear in mind, Lawrence Fox is sitting next to Shammy Chakra fucking Barty. There isn't a politician or a talking head that I despise more than Shammy Chakra Barty. And I've been watching her now for 20 years. Well, there is Owen Jones of The Guardian. Yeah, let's be honest. She'd be number two after Owen Jones. So you hate gays and women, do you, Richie? Yes! I hate all gays, I hate women more. I'm a homophobic misogynist. Anyway, just bear in mind he's sitting next to Chakra Barty. So here's another bit of this lovely exchange.
I think that it's one of the dangerous things about throwing racism around in this country, which we're doing a lot at the moment, is people become so conscious of it that things like the Manchester grooming scandal get ignored. So that, you know, we need to be careful that we need to call out racism when it's seen, when it's obvious and when it's there, and we should stand together to condemn it. But for fear of sounding racist, there's been horrific things have happened in Manchester and in towns all over the north of England, and we should be careful and use racism when it's there and it's obvious, and not call someone racist just because they don't agree with you.
Yeah, fair enough. He has a point, just a point, about the racist card being played leading to the grooming gangs getting away with it. The grooming gangs got away with it for far more complex reasons than he could possibly understand. The whole racism thing was an excuse. It wasn't genuine. In other words, let's not look into it because we will be accused of Islamophobia, or we will increase tensions or hatred for the Muslim community. That's the excuse they used, but they didn't mean that. see other programmes. I've explained what I think is going on there. But he does well. Now, the subject of the Labour leadership contest comes up. And Shami Chakrafuckin-Bharti, sitting alongside him, looks like a bulldog chewing a wasp. She's ready to explode. Women leaders. This made me laugh.
Which Labour candidate, if any, do you believe can reconnect with lost voters in the North?
Who should replace Magic Grandpa? Keir
That's
Starmer.
That's original. That's original.
Keir Starmer
gets your vote, would he? And what, why Keir?
He just looks like he can take Boris on quite well. Do you know what I mean? That's what I get by.
You don't think any of the four women would be...
Oh, it's not about women. Jeepers.
That was Chakra effing Bharti. You don't think any of the four women...
Do you know what I mean? That's what I get by.
You don't think any of the four women would be...
Oh, it's not about...
Shut up, you little pixie.
Women. Jeepers. Creepers. Sorry.
So I just was interested
in
your
view. Let me rewind.
Of
any of the women... Is that better? Any woman... Because it's really important what gender you are or sex you are rather than what your policies are and how you approach politics.
Come I'll be on. Honest with you, the four women standing for Labour leadership are absolutely shit to a woman, but Starmer is worse. Let's be honest about it. Look into Starmer, right? Okay. It doesn't matter who leads them. It doesn't matter. It matters not. I'm fed up of reading comments on my timeline about, oh, it's not a great bunch. It couldn't be a great bunch. I don't know how many MPs they have. What have they got? 210, 214, 199, 205? I'm not sure. None of them would ever do anything. You got on your hands and knees when Corbyn won the contest 4 years ago. You kissed the ground. And you insulted people like me when we told you you're a Muppet. It's not going to mean anything in the end. You called me names. You couldn't believe it. You said you were a socialist. You're a disgrace, Alan. And all that stuff, which I didn't give a shit about, really. And you've gone into hiding since Corbyn proved to be what I said he would be. I haven't had a single apology from anybody. Not one. Hence, you know, such is the level of narcissism and identity politics. Not one fucking person has emailed me to go, Christ, Richie, you are bang on there. I don't need that, by the way. I don't need vindication from anybody. But it would be nice, you know, if you could look into your fucking soul and say... Yeah, the guy's right, really. We're never going to change our lives. We're never going to exit this paradigm through the ballot box. He's right, you know, that BBG, that big ignorant fucking Irish guy, is right. But you can't bring yourself to say that. And that's your downfall, you see. You'll never learn. Let's move on to The Simpsons. Now, I loved The Simpsons for years. The first 15 to 16 seasons of it. Well, some of the greatest satire I've ever seen anywhere. Some of the cleverest satire. Just world-class stuff, you know. And the characterisation, the vocal characterisations by all the actors and actresses on there. From Nancy Cartwright, of course. Bart and so many other characters she plays as well. I think she plays Ralph Wiggum as well, and many others. To Hank Azaria, who, like Nancy Cartwright, is a very gifted vocalist. And one of the characters Hank has played for more than a quarter of a century, nearly 30 years now, I'm guessing it is 30 years, is it? Is Apu Nahasapimapetilon. Apu Nahasapimapetilon, yes. Apu plays the owner of the Quickie Mart store, and like every other character in The Simpsons, Apu is deliberately portrayed as an outrageous stereotype of Indian people, like every other character, regardless of race or creed. That's how The Simpsons does it. Whenever an Irish guy appears in The Simpsons, he's invariably pissed out of his brains. Right? Invariably, mostly pissed. See the Simpsons episode where they go to Dublin. It's all hilarious racial stereotypes and cultural stereotypes. It's all very funny. Listen just for a brief second to Azaria portraying Apu. This is a little outtake.
Thank you for coming. I'll see you in hell.
All right.
You see, whether igloo, hut or lean-to or a geodesic dome, there's no structure I have been to which I'd rather call my home.
Hello! Ah!
When I first arrived, you were all such jerks, but
slavery. Slavery it is, sir.
Yes, I am a citizen. Now, which way to the welfare office?
What?
I'm kidding. I work.
Right, so that's Apu, as portrayed by Hank Azaria. Very good. Now, you'll know this, because after about a year of wrangling and heart-wrenching discussions, apparently, Hank Azaria says he will no longer play Apu in The Simpsons. He's stepping down from the role because of years of controversy. He started playing the convenience store owner back in 1990. I was right. But the character has been accused of reinforcing racial stereotypes. Jesus wept. It's not immediately clear if Apu would get a new voice or if the character would disappear from the cartoon. All we know is I won't be doing the voice anymore, says Hank Azaria. We all made the decision together. We all feel like it's the right thing and good thing to do. Now, last year, Azaria was talking about this on the Stephen Colbert show. Let's remind ourselves of what he said then. Hank Azaria talking about the pain and suffering of Indian Americans. The pain and suffering.
Do you understand why some Indian American or South Asian American actors are offended by that character?
Yeah, not just actors. Of course I understand. I mean, it's come to my attention more and more, especially over the last couple of years, as you say, that people in the South Asian community in this country have been fairly upset by the voice and characterization.
Did that surprise you?
Of Apu? Not over time. It did when I first heard about it, absolutely. And it's sparked a lot of conversation about what should be done with the character going forward, which is not so easy to answer. And I've tried to express this before. You know, the idea that anybody was young or old, past or present, was bullied or teased based on the character of Apu, it just really makes me sad. It was certainly not my intention. I wanted to spread laughter and joy with this character. And the idea that it's, you know, brought pain and suffering in any way, that it was used to marginalize people, it's upsetting, genuinely.
How the fuck could this guy's portrayal of Apu Nahasa Pima Pedalon cause anybody pain and suffering? It's a stereotype. It's a racist stereotype. It's not racist what he's doing. It's a racial stereotype, not racist. You might say it's a Freudian slip. It's a racial stereotype. He's playing on all the stereotypical things. You know, the Indian guy running the corner shop. Right. Charging exorbitant prices for stuff that you can get for half the price in the supermarket. The voice, it's a stereotype. The police chief is portrayed as a grotesque stereotype. As I've already said, the Irish, a grotesque stereotype. Many other backgrounds and ethnicities portrayed where slight differences that you might attribute to a certain ethnic group are amplified outrageously by the show's creators for the laugh. And apparently tens and tens of thousands of Indian men and women have said this is ridiculous. Apu is funny. It makes us laugh to see this character Apu in The Simpsons. I'm not making this up, by the way. Tens of thousands have signed petitions. But their voices don't matter. One Indian-American bloke, wrote a blog about this and made a film about it. And based on that, they're introducing this terrifying precedent based on one guy saying, oh, I had to put up with a lot of shit over the years. But tens of thousands of Indians are going, it's funny. When I see Irish people falling around on the streets in The Simpsons, I find it funny. It doesn't hurt me. It doesn't make me think, oh, the Irish are being put down again. No, it's fucking funny. It is taking a truth of sorts about Irishmen that we drink a little bit more than we should, which is true, and that we are maybe more likely to drink than maybe somebody else from another country, maybe. And it is amplifying that, multiplying it by 100 for the crack. It's fucking funny. But he's back down. He's back down to this nonsense. So the other thousands of Indian men and women, they don't matter. Just the one arsehole who made a complaint about it. And what precedent does that set then going forward? people won't be able to play somebody with a disability. It'll have to be a disabled person. But that's not fucking acting, surely. Right? Will it be such? Will it be thus? Will it be official in the future that if you want an Irishman to play a role, it's got to be an Irish actor? But then we will be deprived of the hilarious failures of Tommy Lee Jones in Blown Away, of Tom Cruise in Far and Away, of Russell Crowe. We would be deprived of rolling around the fucking floor in our living rooms, laughing our arses off at these people's attempts to do our accent. That's where it's going. Well, the part is this Irish guy who goes to New York and tries to raise funds for the IRA. Well, it's got to be an Irish actor then. Well, I was actually thinking of Ryan. I was thinking of Ryan Gosling for the part. You can't have him. It's cultural appropriation. No, but Gosling is a fucking good actor. I think he'd be great in the role. And he's also got the physical attributes for it. No, it's got to be Michael Murphy. Glasnevin. He played a great Bishop fucking Brennan in the stage show of Father Ted. Madness. So it's funny. We put these stories on Twitter and we laugh. And we say, oh Jesus. Oh Jesus. It's happened now. Azaria, who's played Apu for 30 years. It's been hilarious. Because one guy said pain and suffering. He's been encouraged to step back. And when he says, I won't do it anymore, the audience bursts into spontaneous applause. Where the fuck does this all end? I think you know where it all ends. That's it for Sunday View. I've had enough of that story. Have a fantastic Sunday. Glory, glory, Man United. Look after yourselves and one another. Back with you 9:30 a.m. tomorrow on YouTube for the newspaper roundup to begin the week. And of course, the Richie Allen Radio Show at 5 tomorrow. Have a great day. Bye for me. Bye now.